morning, and thanks for tuning in KSLM this fine day here on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM as we now present Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning, Salem. Hello, I'm Stacy Ann. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Enjoying a terrific Tuesday. Thank you for tuning in. Already the 27th day of October and a little bit chilly out there this morning. If you're heading out here pretty soon, you want to grab that sweatshirt, maybe some gloves. I know I had a little bit of ice on my windshields this morning, and I just love this time of year and the crispness of the air and the fresh air, and so thankful. Very thankful for our clean air that we have once again. Reminded, you know, just in the September, around the 7th of September, how bad our air was. And certainly still in that recovery mode, keeping all the families in prayer who've been impacted by the fire. And as I was driving up the street this morning, as cold as it was, keeping those that are compromised in housing in our prayers, if they're living in their campers and on the street, some of our homeless folks. I know a lot of our nonprofit organizations are doing what they can do to let people know that there's some resources to help them stay warm. And certainly it's going to warm up today. We'll see temperatures in the high 50s, maybe even into 60s, so throughout this week. So that's good news, certainly. And certainly talking about good news, woo, I was so excited last night to hear that indeed Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. And here's something that's kind of fun. So far, one-third of the Supreme Court has been appointed by Donald J. Trump. And I think this is a word I woke up to yesterday morning. Didn't really talk about it yesterday on the air. I've been chewing on it all throughout yesterday and today. And it's a word that I just can't shake. And it's called momentum. We have momentum. And do you feel it? I can feel it. There's momentum in all over Oregon. And it's there's just this sense that things are about to change. And as we talk through what we're going to talk about today, this hour and then next hour, I think you'll see a theme of momentum. And I've talked about this before in the air, and hopefully you're not tired of me talking about this, but you know, we can curse at the darkness and show all the things that are going on in society and things we don't agree with the oppression of our Governor Brown and all these decisions that are being made for us and the people aren't really being heard. And it's frustrating. We can curse at the darkness, but we can be a part of the solution. Let's turn up the light. And I think with this momentum, we have an opportunity to really engage this last week, that last push, right, to get to the goal. And I wanted to play this. You know, I'm a friend and I love John Maxwell. And so he has a word for us this morning on momentum.
Hills, Michigan wants me to say something about the word momentum. Anita, momentum is a leader's best friend, because when you have what I call the big mo, life is very good. In fact, I say momentum is the great exaggerator. When you have it, it exaggerates everything in a positive way. When you don't have it, it exaggerates everything in a negative way. In other words, when you've got momentum in your company, people think you're better than you really are. Oh, happy day, touchdown. And when you don't have momentum, when things are sliding, people think you're worse than you are. So here's my word of advice to you. When you've got momentum, keep pushing the ball. Don't let it stop. It's your best friend. It'll solve problems for you. It'll make your leadership a lot easier. You say, but when I have momentum, I think I'll take a vacation. No. Only take a vacation when you have no momentum. When everything is lost, take a vacation. Nothing's moving. Go take a couple of weeks. Come back. It'll still be there. Keep the ball of momentum going. That's my word of advice to you, because it is your best friend.
Oh, yes. Thank you, John Maxwell, with momentum, talking about the momentum that we have here locally in our local elections, all the way up the ticket to President Trump. And certainly he is winning. And we found out, you may or may not have heard during the first hour with Jeff Croft, but there it was a decision made out of the Supreme Court that won't let the Democrats count the mail-in ballots like 6 days after the election. Wisconsin cannot count mail ballots that arrive well after the polls close. under an order issued Monday by the Supreme Court. So that's a big defeat for the Democrats and whatever they might want to try to do out of Wisconsin. So we have momentum. It sounds like potentially in Pennsylvania, they're with the new appointment of Amy Coney Barrett, they're going to maybe take another look at the Pennsylvania. You know, they said that they could count the ballots 3 days after election. So there's momentum going. Now, one of the questions that I've gotten, and I thought this was really interesting, and I think it you know, even those of us have been out of school for a while, even those of us have gone through college, it can be confusing understanding how exactly elections work with the popular vote. We hear about electoral college, and I think that we're going to start talking about that as we move towards the election. And I found this very informative audio that I thought I'd play right now just to remind us, because as we move from now, we have 1 week until the election. We're going to start hearing all the pundits talking about electoral votes and this state and that state. I thought, well, let's play this video. I think it'll be very helpful and just a good refresher for those of us that might know about the Electoral College.
Most people have heard of the Electoral College during presidential election years. But what exactly is the Electoral College? Simply said, it is a group of people appointed by each state who formally elect the president and vice president of the United States. To understand how this process began and how it continues today, we can look at the Constitution of the United States, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 of the Constitution. It specifies how many electors each state is entitled to have. Since 1964, there have been 538 electors in each presidential election. How do they decide on the number 538? Well, the number of electors is equal to the total voting membership of the United States Congress, 435 representatives plus 100 senators and 3 electors from the District of Columbia. Essentially, the Democratic candidate and Republican candidate are each trying to add up the electors in every state so that they surpass 270 electoral votes, or just over half of 538 votes, and win the presidency. So how do states even get electoral votes? Each state receives a particular number of electors based on population size. The census is conducted every 10 years, so every time the census happens, states might gain or lose a few electoral votes. Let's say you're a voter in California, a state with 55 electoral votes. If your candidate wins in California, they get all 55 of the state's electoral votes. If your candidate loses, they get none. This is why many presidential candidates want to win states like Texas, Florida, and New York. If you currently add up the electoral votes of those three states, you would have 96 electoral votes. Even if a candidate won North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and West Virginia, they would only gain 31 electoral votes total from those eight states. Here's where it can get a little tricky. On a rare occasion, like in the year 2000, someone can win the popular vote, but fail to gain 270 electoral votes. This means that the winner may have won and collected their electoral votes by small margins, winning just enough states with just enough electoral votes, but the losing candidate may have captured large voter margins in the remaining states. If this is the case, the very large margins secured by the losing candidate in the other states would add up to over 50% of the ballots cast nationally. Therefore, the losing candidate may have gained more than 50% of the ballots cast by voters, but failed to gain 270 of the electoral votes. Some critics of the Electoral College argue the system gives an unfair advantage to states with large numbers of electoral votes. Think of it this way. It is possible for a candidate to not get a single person's vote, not one vote, in 39 states or the District of Columbia, yet be elected president by winning the popular vote in just 11 of these 12 states: California, New York, Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Georgia, or Virginia. This is why both parties pay attention to these states. However, others argue that the Electoral College protects small states such as Rhode Island, Vermont, and New Hampshire, and even geographically large states with small populations like Alaska, Wyoming, and the Dakotas. That's because a candidate can't completely ignore small states, because in a close election, every electoral vote counts. There are certain states that have a long history of voting for a particular party. These are known as safe states. For the past four election cycles, in 1996, 2000, 2004, and 2008, Democrats could count on states like Oregon, Maryland, Michigan, and Massachusetts, whereas the Republicans could count on states like Mississippi, Alabama, Kansas, and Idaho. States that are teetering between parties are called swing states. In the past four election cycles, Ohio and Florida have been swing states, twice providing electoral votes for a Democratic candidate and twice providing electoral votes for a Republican candidate. Think about it. Do you live in a safe state? If so, is it a Democratic or Republican safe state? Do you live in a swing state? Are your neighboring states swing or safe? Is the population in your state increasing or decreasing? And do not forget, when you're watching the electoral returns on election night every 4 years and the big map of the United States is on the screen, know that the magic number is 270 and start adding.
Oh, yes. So the Electoral College lesson by Christina Greer, very good animation. And of course, that was put out on about 2012. So it's a little older, but it still gives that great education and a great reminder for those of us of how this all works. And here's the interesting thing that I'm finding and I'm feeling, and tying back to the momentum, is this, that we have momentum going and there is some polling going on. I don't know if you're on Twitter at all, but there's a Florida dude guy that's doing polling in all of these states. And he's not just doing a few random polls. He's hitting all the key major states. In fact, right now he has in Oregon polling for Trump over Biden, which is extremely interesting. And so all of the everything that we know about the election cycle this year, I think, has totally been upended. And I think it can be well categorized by something that President Trump said during the last debate. If you had an opportunity to watch the last debate, it was interesting when the heat was kind of turning up on Vice President Joe Biden, and they were talking about China. Remember how he just stopped and paused and looked at the camera and said, "This isn't about your family or, you know, Trump's family or my family. This is about your family and your bald tires and et cetera, et cetera." That's a Stacey paraphrase. But he just looked into that camera and he started talking to us at home and the children, right? And then Trump's like, "You see that? You see that? If they would have been doing their job, I wouldn't have needed to run 4 years ago. That's a politician, and I'm not a politician." And I think that's the sifting that's going on right now. I believe in my heart of hearts, I really feel this momentum is people are so upended over this pandemic and how it's been handled, particularly in the Democrat states and cities across this nation, that, you know, where is the compassion? Where are the people serving us, representing us? Why haven't we had all across this state focus groups and people talking to our elected leaders? Why haven't they been more engaged? Why hasn't our Governor Brown been in the communities talking to business leaders and understanding what's going on? There definitely is a disconnect, and I think folks are ready to make a change this November 3rd. What do you think? We'll be back after this. I got some voting statistics here to go over with you. Thank you for tuning in to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. We'll be back. Good morning to you. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann. Glad to be hanging out with you on this terrific Tuesday. It's chilly today. Right now, if you're heading out soon, you want to bundle up and wear layers today, because by the end of the day, this afternoon, we're supposed to see temperatures in the 60s, and I'm okay with that. I want to say thank you to Dave and Paige Smith with Realty One Group here in Willamette Valley. They're ready to go above and beyond to serve you and your real estate needs. If you're thinking about doing something different, or maybe you're wondering, maybe I want to sell my home and do something bigger or smaller, or maybe you're looking into some investment income. I know the mortgage rates, the lending rates are real good right now. Give them a call, 503-939-7000. 99 as we continue to talk about momentum this morning and what's going on. And I just feel it in the air of this excitement towards the election day, November 3rd. And now the Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed last night, and just hearing the celebration of all of the connections I've had for over the last 20 years in the pro-life work, the pro-life movement, all the folks that have been contending and praying and believing, the Justice House of Prayer that's been in D.C. and Matt Lockett and his group, and Sean Foyt's been out there, and just a lot of people just saying this is what we envisioned all those years ago in 1999 when we started prayer 24/7, you know, really making a change in America. We need good, firm justices. And again, this election, if you don't think life is worth protecting, or, you know, the personal choice, the woman's right to choose. You keep hearing this, and even the ads out of Portland, the media ads are just out there about, you know, coming against candidates that are standing for life. I found this morning, and I wanted to share it with you because I think it's really telling. I have a good friend, Becky, and her and I have walked through a lot of life together over the years, and she is someone who has been very bold and brave and confident about sharing about her abortion loss and her personal life. And she has had found healing, and I was very fortunate to be able to walk beside her through that event of healing in her life. And this is what she wrote on her Facebook page, and I thought it was really telling. Do you support a woman's right to self-destructive behavior or to suicidal thoughts? I assume you support a woman's right to violent nightmares and severe depression? Oh, sounds absurd, right? That is what you support when you support a woman's right to abortion. And science and statistics have proven, if you do not know, if you're on the fence today, and I've had a conversation just a few weeks ago with a gentleman that I highly respect, a business leader in the community, who thinks that the abortion issue isn't something people should focus on, that a woman has a right to choose. It's her body, her choice. Those are the talking points that we've been told to think. But if you really cared about women, You would understand that abortion event in their life, it's a traumatic event that never ends. They may initially feel some relief, but it continues to percolate and cause trauma and suicidal thoughts and ideation. And this is backed up by statistics and facts. And I've testified to this in many hearings and have worked with women throughout the years. And so really it is about protecting life. And besides that, you know, who knows how many of these women in the womb, what about their lives being protected? And so this life issue is an issue that we need to look at. Do the candidates line up? When we're looking at our local elections, where do people stand on life? That's why on our website at kslm.news, we have put on there election resources. And if you click on that link, election resources, one of the resources there is the Oregon Right to Life, their endorsements and their list of candidates who said that they stand for life and have been supportive for life. And when we talk about that, it's from conception to natural death. I think that's really important to use that as you're looking at looking to who you're going to vote for along the ballot issues. Now, right now, the up-to-date ballot being the ballots that are being brought into the county courthouses right now, the numbers, let's look at them. Marion County, so far, 85,803 ballots returned, 40% of the registered voters. In Polk County, 21,786 ballots returned, that's 36% of the registered voters. Altogether in Oregon, 1,188,824 ballots returned. That's about 40% of registered voters. Now, this is coming from an article from the Salem Reporter. And so far, this is a huge, huge turnout. In 2016, Oregon had over 2 million voters, about an 80% turnout. Marion County had 141 votes. That was about a 77% turnout. And Polk County had 41,445 votes. So we're going to keep an eye on this and keep an update as we go towards the day, because I continue to maintain that if we get our ballots filled out, get them put in as soon as possible, that allows those that are trying to get out the vote, their resources, their time, their phone calls, to really go to the ones that haven't voted yet. And it allows us that opportunity. And I want to remind you, don't put it it in the mail any longer. There's no guarantee if you put it in the mail today that it's going to get there by the 3rd. So there's lots of places that, and we'll go through the list here in a little bit, of where you can turn your ballot in. And here's something else, too, that I think is something you want to, and I just shared this on our Facebook page. Oregon Social Determinants of Health Measures Work Group meets November 2nd. What is this? The Oregon Health Authority is actually asking for public input. A public meeting of the Oregon Social Determinants of Health Measurement Work Group. The work group's purpose is recommended a measure related to social determinants of health and consideration of metrics and scoring committee. I think this has a lot to do with how they're going to figure out in the future how we get back to work, how we get back to school. And I think we need to inundate with public input. We need to sit in on these committees. When we find out about them, we just need to say, hey, we're interested. You're not going to lock us out anymore. We need to know what's going on behind these closed doors. Telling us a half an hour before a meeting is not adequate. This is going to take place on November 2nd at 9:30 a.m. in the morning, and it's going to be by Zoom. And so I put all the details on our Facebook page. You can find it at KSLM Radio. If you're interested in more details, I can email it to you. Send me an email, Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at KSLM.news. Coming up here, we're going to get into a conversation about what do you do about school this year? How can we continue to get our kids where they need the help and the support and the encouragement they need with this distance learning? What can we do? What are our resources? What kind of help is out there? And we've got someone on the line that's going to join the conversation after this break. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. News that you can use on this Tuesday and every day. We'll be back real soon.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a good morning.
Wake up to a brand new day.
This morning.
I'm stepping on my way.
Good morning.
You give me strength. You give me just what I need. And I can feel the hope that's rising in me.
It's a good morning.
Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, trying to still get our caller on the line. I appreciate the faithfulness of our listeners as we try to figure out what our technical challenges are this morning. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio.
Here.
Oh, yay! There you are. And thanks to Phil, our engineer, trying to figure out what's going on. So we did it. We got on the air through Skype. So I called you through Skype because we're having problems with our regular TELUS phone line. So thank you for joining in and being a part of the conversation. And our time is so limited now, but let's talk a little bit about what your program is and how you're bringing resources to families here in Oregon. I'm just going to let you go.
Well, a couple of things we did, we had a chance to learn from last spring in terms of how to do distance learning and do it well. And so when the shutdown came, my administrative team and I, we made our huge commitment, and we kind of made a focused mission to preserve the confidence of the parents and kids and students that we serve. So what we did is we went above and beyond. So we did crazy things like we gave grades, we took attendance, we delivered door-to-door resources, computers, assignments, and then also other resources, made sure all families were hooked up with internet, et cetera. And when we juxtapose the feedback we were getting from students that we were serving versus employees that we had who had kids in other districts, that's when the real disparity happened. And that's what inspired us to work real hard this summer, restructure our school district. And we decided that we had to have multiple options for parents and families during the pandemic because everybody's story is different and every situation is different. So we did three things. One is we opened our K-12 school for in-person instruction. We invested about $300,000 in safety, PPE, and sanitation, which was That's an entire year's worth of normal discretionary budget, but we felt it was important to keep students and families safe. And naturally, we have a long waiting list, but our school is full. And we restructured our regular K-12 online program, which is something we had been doing for 2 years. And then the third thing we did, recognizing that a lot of parents were looking at homeschooling options or other options, is we created what's called Learn at Home Oregon. And that is a program, it's a K-8 program designed to limit screen time based on teacher recommendation, and also something with some traditional as well as part of learning, and that also includes PE. And in addition, the program is free to all families. So,
Mark, let me ask you a question real quick. First of all,
sure.
Are you on a speakerphone? Or
if no.
Just double checking. We're still having some sound challenges. But this is, you're talking about schools, traditional working in a public, kids giving support to kids in a traditional school setting, or is this a private school setting?
Well, this is a public charter school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created these three options for families, and we were pleasantly surprised that the Learn at Home has been probably the most popular. It's almost 500 students.
Incredible.
And you got to remember, we were 176 student school district last spring, and mm-hmm. now we're pushing 1,000 kids. And so it's been a real, we've had a really scramble to kind of ramp up to provide all these needs. And the phone's been ringing all day. So the program is really popular because of the balance. And there's one login. There's not multiple logins. All the curriculum is proprietary, so it's secure. And then the lessons are designed to let the students learn at their own pace. And it's been a good thing for parents because we allow parent participation. If they want to participate, they can stay in the room. There are teachers that check in, and we provide a ton of teacher and technical support as well for both students and parents. And so, you know, we created the program by listening to parents and what they needed. And what's been really, really amazing about it is just the kind of response we've got. We have students from all over Oregon being served in the Learn at Home program.
And this is something that it's a model. If we continue to stay in this adjusted education mandate, in a sense, this is something that could be modeled in other areas, maybe even other states. What are you seeing as far as your students retaining the information? What is the feedback that you're getting from the students? Because what is your age range that you're working with?
So it's kindergarten through eighth grade. And, that was the reason we focused on the younger grades to start with was because that was an area where a lot of kids just weren't getting the supports they needed.
Right.
Things weren't consistent from district to district. So we launched this program and focused on the young kids. As a matter of fact, we had almost 70, 80 kindergartners of all things, which
wow.
is rare in the online world. And then we have, teachers who are skilled and trained, very well trained in how to work in, micro schools and work with pods of students and do all that work online. So there's social emotional supports as well. So our attendance has been incredibly big. Normally on an online program, if you can get 65% attendance, you're really doing well. We're pushing 90%.
That's fantastic.
Regular attendance.
So how do people find out more? I know you're full right now, you're saying, and there's a waiting list, but how do people find out more in the limited time that we have? And I apologize for all the technical difficulties mm-hmm. we've had today, and I'd love to have you back on. We could probably talk for a whole hour or more. What is the mm-hmm. way people could get a hold of you or your information and learn more?
Well, there's two ways. One is they can go to just Google ALSEA, A-L-S-E-A, school district. And that'll bring up our website. And there's information there. But for the Learn at Home Oregon program, just type in one word, learnathomeoregon.com, and that will pull up the website.
That's excellent. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience and hanging in there through all of this, Mark. We'll look forward to connecting with you soon. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, news that you can use. We are overcoming some obstacles this morning with some technical difficulties, but we'll get over it, under it, or through it, right? Hour two, we're going to have a wonderful conversation, hopefully, with Susan Gallagher as we talk more about parental involvement in education. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM.